The following podcast is a glimpse into the life of Ecclesia Houston. We pray it is a blessing as you seek to follow Jesus, the liberating King, and live in his kingdom here on earth as it is in heaven.
I am grateful that you made of it. How many of you didn't even realize that your technology changed the time on you and that you lost an hour and it didn't? Yeah, it's seamless now. I just knew I was moving slow this morning and I didn't know why. And then you start to figure it out. I'm really grateful to get to be with you. We're in a series in Lent looking at some of the parables that Jesus taught. And you learn a lot about who Jesus is and what it means to be a Christian by the red letters, the words that Jesus actually said. And in these parables, he's telling these really often absurd stories to make a point. And I gotta tell you, the point that he's making for us this week is, it's a breath of fresh air. It's refreshing water. It's if you remember being a kid and playing really hard and your mom making you lemonade out of that frozen can, anybody else? And it had chunk and you just went like, oh, that tastes so good. This week can be that kind of message. I'm curious how many of you grew up in enough of a religious environment that from time to time through life, when you've had an extreme amount of fun, you almost feel guilty, like there's something wrong. I had so much fun that I must have done something wrong. Am I the only? There's this sense that, it's one of these places in faith that we have often missed it. In fact, there's a reason. If you look at the Gospel of John, right? The Gospel of John begins beautifully with this poetic rendering of creation. John tells us, before time itself was measured, the voice, the Logos, the living word was speaking. The voice was and is God. And that celestial word remained ever present with the Creator. His speech shaped the entire cosmos. And that goes into the story of how John led the way to Jesus. And Jesus is on the scene. And then in John chapter 2, it could start with anything of what Jesus does. But it starts with Jesus in Cana. Now, I got to tell you, I just say the word Cana, and something for me is just like, ah. I've officiated a wedding in Cana. Like, I've officiated a lot of vow renewals in Cana. It's close to one of my favorite wineries. It's one of those places when you're there, and you went, like, this story. Like, you remember, they're at a wedding, and what you need to know about ancient weddings is that it wasn't a ceremony and a reception, right? It was days of partying. Anybody have an Indian friend and been invited to their wedding? Get an Indian friend, like find an Indian friend and make them a good friend. And if you're a good friend, you might get invited to the wedding. And when you get invited to your friend's Indian wedding, you're like, they know how it's done. Like they know how to do it. We've missed something entirely because for days you celebrate and you enter into this thing and you're invested, by the way, in their marriage. You're like, I'm a part of it. I feel like, and that's what ancient weddings were like. There's this sense of like, you partied and you partied. And at this wedding, they're days into it. And Mary comes and she's apparently aware and she comes to Jesus, right? You remember, she says like, Jesus, there's a problem. They're about to be out of wine. And you remember what Jesus said? Like, how's it my problem? And then she says something. This would be a verse, right? She turns to the servants and says, do whatever he says. Whatever he says, do it. That'd be a good verse to like put on your mirror, right? Whatever he says, do it. And she knew, like, if I nudge Jesus, like he's gonna sort this thing out, right? And you remember Jesus sees these clay vessels. These were not like jars for drinking. This was what you would use to fill the mikvah. The mikvah is the small pool that you would be ritually cleansed in. So this was like if you had a small pool or a hot tub, this is what you would use to fill those, right? And literally, Jesus says, take those, fill them to the brim. I mean, we're talking 200 gallons plus. If we bottled wine the way we bottled wine today, you're talking about more than 1,000 bottles of wine. So when Jesus goes, I'm not just going to like run to the corner store. We're going to have 1,000 bottles of wine. What's he saying? Like the party's going to keep going. And there's something to Christian faith that you need to hear it today. God's invited us into a celebration. And if you're missing the party, don't. In one of the other parables we looked at, the worst thing you could do is miss the party. The older brother's pouting, and I did this, and ma, 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 and he's not at the party. And everybody else is like, we're at the party. It's pretty great. One of the best things that happened at our wedding, I had a great wedding celebration, and there were a lot of things I loved about it. If you came into my small little condo in Sharpstown, you would think that this is my favorite photo, because I got a really big version of this. In fact, I had a friend who's an artist paint it for me recently. I love it. But if you really leaned in, you'd find out pretty quickly that my favorite photo from our wedding is actually this photo, because it happened at 3:30 a.m. after one of the kids spilled wine on Kristen's wedding dress. And but it's okay. It's actually the best thing ever, because we were taking a photo. The kids danced with us until 3:30, and they wanted to take one more photo at the photo booth, right? And then they did that thing that kids love to do, and we didn't know they were going to do, and they jumped in the air in the photo, and the youngest Jesse hit the wine glass, and then it. And it's not really a party until the wedding dress is covered in wine, right? And I told her, like, we're never going to clean that dress. We're going to, like, because it's a symbol. Like, the kids knew how to party. Like, it was worth celebrating. And this is what I want you to hear. The life of faith, it's worth celebrating. If it feels like a funeral dirge to you, you've missed Christianity. You've joined religion. And I got to tell you, nobody wants to sign up for that. And there's a reason. Tony Campolo, in an old book, it's a beautiful old book, and tells some beautiful stories, says it this way, and I think he's exactly right. He says, the kingdom of God is a glorious and a gigantic party. We've signed up for, I want to tell you, the best party that has ever existed. And you see it over and over again in the parables that we've looked at and some that we haven't, right? Remember what happens in that parable where there's a lost coin, there's a lost son, there's lost sheep. And by the way, like, Jesus was, he was part comedian, right? He was messing with, and that's what you see in the parable last week and the one this week. He's messing with the religious people. He's tweaking at them, right? The religious people, the priests, they were highly concerned with purity, right? So they cared about things being clean and pure. The dirtiest animals, the worst thing you could do is be a shepherd. Like, so he turns to him and he's like, how about you have 100 sheep? Like, they wouldn't have 100 sheep. But he's messing with them, right? And what if one sheep gets lost? Or what if you had some coins and you lost a coin? Or what if you had two sons and one of them is lost and he squanders? And what happened? And you hear in the story this sense of, like, it doesn't matter. Steal your coin, steal your sheep, steal your son. They always belong. When they come back, what did they do? And each of them, you celebrate. You hear it over and over again. In fact, it's fascinating to me. One of my friends, Gabe Lyons, wrote a book called Unchristian, and he did a survey and they asked people, like, what do you think of Christians? And it was a lot of what you might expect. It's sad to me, but people said self-righteous, judgmental. Nobody said parties too much. Nobody said that. But that was the critique of Jesus and his disciples, right? Luke 5, the religious leaders come to Jesus. And it tells us the Pharisees and their associates, the religious scholars, got the attention of some of Jesus' disciples. And in low voices, they started saying, hey, what's wrong with you? Why are you eating and drinking with tax collectors and other immoral people? Right? If somebody comes and asks you the question, like, you might be the best Christian in the room. Right? And Jesus heard it, and so he responded. And he told them, healthy people don't need a doctor. But sick people do. I haven't come for the pure and the upstanding. I've come to call notorious sinners to rethink their lives and turn to God. What do we see? Like, Jesus wanted to be with the people that were real, that knew they needed grace. And then the Pharisees say, well, explain to us why you and your disciples are so commonly found partying like this, when our disciples, and even the disciples of John, are known for fasting rather than feasting. They're known for saying prayers rather than drinking wine. And then Jesus explains it to him. He says, imagine there's a wedding going on. Is that the time to tell the guests to ignore the bridegroom and fast? Sure, there's a time for fasting when the bridegroom has been taken away. What's he saying? He's saying, when you walk with me, and this is what we're invited to do, Ecclesia, to walk with Jesus, it ought to be a celebration. It's a party. It's a feast. Yes, there will be time to fast. But even in Lent, I hope you realize there's a reason that Sundays are set aside in Lent. Sundays are set aside to feast because we're a people that are made to feast. Every Sunday is a little taste of the resurrection. And so whatever you're fasting from in Lent, don't fast today. It's not a good idea. Feast today because we're a people that are made to do both. Right? And then Jesus explains it. I'll give you the quick summary, but this is what he says. He says, you wouldn't take new clothes and cut them up and use them to patch old clothes, right? He said it wouldn't work. They'd fall apart. He said you wouldn't take new wine and pour it into old wineskins. Like, and then he says, for some of you, maybe the old wine is fine. Like, but here, actually, let's read it so I don't mess it up at the end of that passage, right? He says, new wine demands new. New wine for new wineskins, right? Keep going. Next. He says, those of you who've never tasted the new wine won't know what you're missing. They'll always say the old wine is good enough for me. Anybody imagine what it would have been like to be at that wedding feast? And if you'd stopped early, you missed like the miracle wine. Remember what the head waiter said? The head waiter was like, what is this? Nobody does this. Nobody saves the good wine for last. You start with Camus and you end with Boone's Farm, right? That's how you do it. That's the schedule. And he's like, you don't save the Camus for the end of the party. Like, nobody does that. And this is what I tell you about, this passage will preach in so many ways. But this is what I'd tell you. If you really walk with Jesus faithfully, you keep reading the Bible, you keep leaning in to community, you keep seeing what God does, the wine gets better and better and better. Every year, I feel like the wine keeps getting better. And God keeps showing me more of who he is and what there is to celebrate. And it's good. It's good news. So what's Jesus telling us in this parable? Let's read it together. In Matthew 22, remember, Jesus is addressing some religious leaders, so he's trying to set some things straight. And this is what he tells them. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like, right? And whenever Jesus says this, it's really important. He's saying, the government of God, the way of God, the way God wants the world to be, the kingdom of heaven is like a king whose son was getting married. And the king organized a great feast, a huge wedding banquet, and he invited everyone he knew. Now hear this, this is the king's friends. This is the people in the king's administration. This is the upper class. And the day the wedding arrived, and the king sent his servants into town to track down his guests, but when the servants approached them with the king's message, they refused to come. So the king sent out another batch of servants. Tell those people I've invited to come to the wedding banquet. Tell them I've prepared a great feast. Everything is ready. The oxen and the fatted cattle have all been butchered, right? He says, the meat is on the grill. The wine is decanted. The table is laid out just so. And off the servants went. And they carried the king's message to errant guests. Now remember, Jesus is telling absurd stories to make a point. It becomes more and more absurd. Who still paid not a whit of attention? One guest headed into his field to work. Another sat at his desk to tend to his account. Some went just to do a normal day's work. Some were paying bills. The rest of the guests actually turned on the servants, brutalizing them and killing them. When he learned of this, the king was furious. And he sent an army to kill the murderers and burn their towns. We got to have a wedding, but some people need to die first. Then we're going to burn their towns. Again, Jesus is being absurd to make a point. But there was, of course, still a wedding to celebrate. So the king turned to his remaining servants, the ones that didn't die, right? Again, this is like watching The Princess Bride, right? This is like you can hear the satire spinning. Are there no Princess Bride fans here? I expected a quote back at me, something. The wedding banquet is ready, the king said, but those I invited didn't rise to the occasion. So go into the streets and invite anyone you see. Invite everyone you meet. He says, go on the street and let's invite regular people everywhere. Not the people I know, but just people. And the servants did just that. They went into the streets and they invited everyone they met, rich and poor, good and bad, high and low, sick and well. Everyone who was invited came. And the wedding hall practically burst with guests. The king looked around the wedding party with glee. Now let's pause there for a minute. This is part of where I think the story starts to get good, right? You went from the rich people to the common people, and now the party's going, and the place is full, and the king is happy. And the king probably realizes what I love most and what I enjoy most about our city and specifically about our church community is that this is the place. I don't know any other place that you can go to where there are rich people and poor people that treat each other as equals. Where you can go and share a meal and you live as brothers and sisters, where people from all backgrounds and experiences and parts of our city come together and live and function as a family. Like there is something beautiful about that diversity. There's something magical about it. And I think the king knew, like some of these people are better dancers than the rich people, right? Don't you think? Like there was probably like, they appreciate the food and the energy's better. And there was just something about the party and it was beautiful. And it was good. And what's Jesus saying so far in this parable? And by the way, there's places Jesus tells a similar parable like this and he stops here, but there's still more to this one, but we're going to pause here for now. What's he saying? Like, hear this. The world hadn't changed that much. There's still, if anybody got it, I don't even follow the royal thing. But if I got invited to the wedding, like I would be there, right? Like it's a thing. When these princes got married, it was a thing. When I was younger, it was the rich white guy that's the king now. What's his name? Charles. That married Diana. Anybody old enough to remember when they got married, right? And it was a thing. It was literally the most viewed thing on television ever. More than Super Bowls. People wanted to just peek in at this wedding. Much less if you got invited to drink the wine and eat the food, like it would have been a party. Everybody would want to be at that party. And it was the same in the ancient world. You would want to be there. Jesus is saying, like, what's more important than the party? So I got a few questions for you, but here's the main one today. Are you too busy for what's most important? I wonder, like, how many of you would look at your life, at the last year, the last 2 years, the last 3 years, and go, did you spend your time doing the most important things? Like when you could take a trip, did you take a trip that was meaningful or did you take a mindless one? How much time, if you looked at your Netflix account, like how much time got wasted and gobbled up on something you just went like, wow. I gotta tell you, we're a part of a community that on a regular basis, you can do things that literally change the world and will change you forever. So like in June, we're gonna do another trip to Mexico City. You ought to join us. There is nothing you will do that's more meaningful than getting to go share your life with young girls that have been rescued from sex trafficking. They've been taken from the streets of Mexico City. And they're in a safe house and we get to make a meal for them. We get to share life with them. We get to throw a block party where we get to meet people that are currently working the streets and find out who's there under coercive means and how do we help be a part of a solution. And we go to great restaurants and eat amazing tacos and drink great wine. There is nothing better than that. But I literally would tell you, like some of you look back on your life and be like, why didn't I do those things? Like my church offered opportunities where I got to be with some of the most amazing people in the world and be a part of something that was meaningful and I just didn't do it. I wonder, like, what could you do that would be more meaningful than that? I promise you, nobody has ever come back from one of those trips. Nobody that went to Poland and served in Ukraine ever came back and went, yeah, I could take it or leave it. I promise you, not a single person has ever done that. Most people came back and went, why didn't I do that already? Do you know how many people have done that Mexico City trip and done it again the next time it went? Why? Because they realize my life is meant to be a part of something that matters, that means something, and that's really, really fun and beautiful. As we lean into Lent, there are a lot of opportunities. I'm going to lead a seminar on March 21st, and I would hate for you to miss it. Paul Randall and I get to guide people with Erica Graham, hopefully again, as well, and talk about what it means to be human. In fact, it bumps up against some of what we're talking about today. There are a lot of us that think anything fun is like a sin of the flesh, and you don't realize that what Paul's talking about, anybody ever get that idea, like use those expressions like guilty pleasures? Like anything pleasurable had to be bad, you should feel guilty for it. Because Paul talks about the sins of the flesh, and we think that's of our body. So anything that feels good has to be bad. But Paul's really talking about our ego. It's your ego that gets in the way. It's not that your body can't experience pleasure. But over at the Westside campus, we're going to laugh, we're going to cry, and we got a new pizza oven over there, and Asher's going to crush it with some amazing pizzas, and we're going to drink some wine and eat some pasta, and we're going to share together. And I promise you, very few of you would be able to say, like, I shouldn't have spent my evening doing something meaningful. I just want to ask you, are you busy paying your bills, and you miss the party, and you miss the things that really matter? Don't. Jesus is being extreme here, to be clear. There are beautiful things happening. Be a part of them. Celebrate, engage. And then the story goes on, and this is where some of us, it can get a little confusing, but I promise you it's not as hard as it seems. It goes on, he tells us the king looks at the party with glee, but he spotted one man who was not dressed appropriately. In fact, he was dressed rather plainly, in clothes not at all fitting for a fine nuptial feast. He came in his like lawn mowing clothes, right? And the king's like, huh. So he asks him, right? That's what you would do if you're the king. He says, kind sir, my friend, how did you get in here without a proper suit of wedding clothes? You just ask him the question. Now, this is what you need to know. In the ancient world, it would have been like, in some ways like today. Anybody ever go to a restaurant that requires like a jacket and you didn't have one? Literally, one time they pulled one out of Lost and Found and it was like, you know, the sleeves were right here. It was like a super short, like a kid's jacket, but it was like, you got to wear a jacket here. So here's your jacket. Like even in the ancient world, you could show up at a wedding and be like, hey, you don't have one? We got one for you. Like put it on. It may not be the best one, but somebody would let you borrow one. But what happened was this guy, he'd come just normal. Like it was disrespectful to the king and to other people. So the king just asked him like, hey, how'd you get in here? But the man was speechless. He didn't say anything. He didn't say, sorry, hey, the food's good. Sorry, I'm enjoying myself. Like, thanks for including me. He just didn't say anything. And in some ways, Jesus is saying, like, it's dishonoring and disrespectful to no-show the king for the party. Like, nobody would do that. But maybe even worse is to come and be a party pooper. Anybody been at a party with a party pooper? They're like complaining about the food and you're like, hey, you're here for free. Like enjoy it, celebrate. He was ruining it for everybody else. So the king said, getting no response, the king told his servants, tie him up and throw him into the outer darkness where there's weeping and grinding of teeth, for many are invited, but few are chosen. Now, if you go to a really Calvinist church, they're going to tell you this parable is about God only chooses a few, and maybe you're chosen and maybe you're not. And they might lean in and like, if you tithe more, you could know you're chosen or something. There might be something there. It's a bad reading of the story, okay? It wasn't actually that the king didn't choose. The king invited everybody. It's just that you appreciate what you were given. This is the question, Ecclesia. This is my question for you. Are you not grateful for all you've been given? Will you express your gratitude? Anybody else realize just a little gratitude? Like, it goes a long way. Anybody else raising teenagers and you're just like, did you say thank you? Like, oh, will you say it one more time? That sounded so good. Because you just like, just a little bit goes a long ways. And it's not just good for people to hear it, and we ought to say it, but it's good for us to express it and to feel it. And everything changes with gratitude. You can go through the hardest things, and if you're grateful for the small things, it's one of my favorite people to travel with at Ecclesia is a guy named Jeff Dismuke. He and his wife recently bought a place in Bend, Oregon, but I've been to like 12 countries with Jeff. And you know why I travel with Jeff? Jeff's an oil and gas guy. He made a lot of money. He did really well. But you know what? He'll stay anywhere. He'll do anything. He'll never complain. And he'll get up in the morning and go, you need me to take out the trash? And you're like, Jeff, you're like a CEO. Like, yeah, I know, I got the trash. Like, and he just, and when you're around people like that, you're like, I want more friends like that. And when you're around people that complain and grumble, you're just like, we have a setup at our Westside campus. If you haven't been over there, by the way, it's beautiful. Come to Saturday night, because it makes room for other people. And Saturday night's fun. And sometimes we hang out afterwards. But we're right next door to St. Francis Church and St. Francis School, and the school's really busy, and it costs like $40 million to go to school there over 12 years. And so some of it's a different kind of population than like always the typical Ecclesia population. And what we've tried to do to be good neighbors is we've let them park in our parking lot, but a couple things happen. The kids park there too, and a lot of the teenagers think that our campus parking lot looks like the Indy 500 racetrack. And so they like to drive really fast, which means I spend all my time going out going, hey, you don't get to drive that fast at our church because we like our kids and we try not to run over them, right? And so I'm regularly out there, and it wasn't just like a month or so ago I was there and a kid was driving really fast, and I went and told him like, hey, you got to slow down here at our parking lot. We're happy to share with you, but you can't do that ever again. And he gave me lip, right? And it was one of those where like, I don't take lip from my own 16-year-old. Like, I don't know who you are, but random rich kid, like, you know, griping about how your Lexus just, I just can't do it, right? And then he said, well, I'll show you how fast it'll go. And I said, no, you won't. I said, you can tell the headmaster when I tell her no one gets to park here anymore that you are the reason, right? Like, you will be the reason. This is turning into a rant, not a sermon, isn't it? And I just got to tell you, like, ungratefulness, like, it just doesn't work. Like, it just, like, be respectful, be kind, be gracious. Jesus is saying, like, don't show up at the party and complain. Don't show up at the party and not tell the host thank you. Don't show up at the party not, like, dress like you're glad to be at the party. Like, you're at the party. Reflect that you're thrilled to be at the party. So, Ecclesia, this is what I want to do. I got one last question for you, and then we'll take communion, and then a few thoughts. Like, if you leaned in and you were really at the party, like, what could go wrong? Like, what could be bad about your life if you partied more often and well? Like, can't you just sense, like, isn't it interesting that the critique of Jesus and his disciples that they were feasting and partying too much? Doesn't it tell you something about who we're made to be? Like, we're a people that are made to do that. So, and I don't know what's wrong with the religious. Anybody ever hear the street preachers out there at like the ballpark? Anybody ever hear? And they like hate baseball. And you're like, what could you hate about baseball? Like, what could be evil about baseball? It's like anything fun has got to be bad. And every time I'm like, am I going to talk to him this time? I'm like, no, I'm not going to let myself do it. But here's a news flash for you. Jesus was invited to parties. Jesus went to the parties. Guess what else? The religious people didn't get invited to the parties. Be the person that people want to invite at your parties. So three things I'd love to see among Ecclesians, and we'll come to communion. Here's the first. What if we were a people that just said, if it's within our capacity, we would never miss a wedding, a birthday party, an anniversary party, a funeral that we celebrate somebody's life, that we just say, if it's within our capacity, we're gonna do our best to be there because we're gonna be a people that lean into the celebration. Could we agree on that? Could we just say together, like, all in favor, aye? All opposed? Unanimous, that's the first vote we've ever taken at Ecclesia, and it worked. Like, if we just be those people, and then would you look at your life and just go, what capacity do I have to host? Here's the good news about an Ecclesia small group. It's a small group of people to party with and that you get to know. And you get to share some food and some drinks and some laughter. And one week you're laughing and the next you're crying, but there's something to being able to do it with the same people. So if you got a house, if you got a backyard, I've seen photos of some of your backyard. They look amazing. I would like to be in it in person, eating your meat. That's what I would like. Like, with grill on, like there and the smoke and all of, like, there's this thing. Like, God was obsessed in the Old Testament with this, the smoke that came up from the altar, right? There's this sense of like, there is nothing better. Anybody have a neighbor that you could smell them grilling? You're like, I want to be there. Like, that's what, it just is like pulling you in, right? There's just this sense of like, that's what we're made for. In fact, Well, one more and then I'll read this passage to you. Would we be the people as well? Again, if you got young kids, figure it out, do what you need to do. But if it's within your power, I would love for people to say about Ecclesians, like, those are the people that stay till the end of the party. You're the shut it down crew. You're the last one on the dance floor. Why? Because we're a people that know we've got a lot to celebrate. God's been good to us. Let's celebrate well. One of my favorite passages is in Isaiah 25, and we'll let this lead us to communion. And the prophet Isaiah says, let me tell you about your God. He says, the eternal, the commander of heavenly armies is preparing a feast. A feast for who? Say it. A feast for everyone. On this mystical mountain with aged wine and good food, the finest wine and the choicest meat, and God will swallow up the oppression that weighs us down. He will take away the heavy shroud that is draped over all the peoples of the world. God will swallow up death forever. The Lord, the Eternal, will wipe away the tears from each and every face and deflect the scorn and shame his people endure from the whole world. For the Eternal determined that it should be so. And in that moment, at that glorious time, people will say, this is our God. We put our hope in him. We knew that he would save us. This is our God, the eternal for whom we waited. Let us rejoice and celebrate in his liberation. Ecclesia, we're a people that are made to celebrate with those who have something to celebrate. As we have friends and brothers and sisters and they get the right job, we ought to celebrate. When we mark another year on this earth, we ought to celebrate. And we ought to be the people leading the way and saying, God's goodness brings joy to the heart. It makes the heart happy.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you would like more information, please visit our website at www.ecclesiahouston.org.